Welcome.
Welcome to...
Oh, wait a second. I forgot what we're doing here. It's a Flanagan joint. I have Flanagan music.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Flanagan.
Give him a taste. Give him a taste.
All right. Coming back in.
Going forward,
yeah,
if it's not a ton of work for you, what if it cuts off as soon as he says Flanagan?
I could
Flanagan.
Yeah, I could make that happen.
Welcome to the Flanosphere.
Welcome, cucks.
Grab a cigar. pull up a nice, your favorite picture of a pregnant lady. And
get ready to be arrested again. See that? Motherfucker got arrested again today.
wait. Oh, Tate. Tate did. I thought you meant Mike Flanagan.
Not Flanagan. No.
I didn't know he was arrested the first time.
No. Andrew Tate arrested. One of his friends was talking openly about how Andrew Tate had plans to leave the country. And the cops are like, no.
You can't trust anyone these days to know the first thing about the law.
Yeah. You can't trust anyone to know about the law. You can't trust anybody to not talk about shit on social media because everything's content, baby. It's all content.
Hey, you don't have to tell us to.
I know.
We're turning 2016's Before I Wake into content somehow, although I guess it remains to be seen.
Yeah. My fall asleep talking about this sleepy ass movie.
What a juiceless film, huh?
Yeah.
Let's get it out of the way.
Not great.
Not the worst. Oculus
is still the worst, I think. I think I liked Hush better than this. But yeah, this is like, this has some major, like, glaring fucking issues.
Yeah.
Like Hush. The very last 2 minutes are insane.
The rundown of what just happened?
Yeah, the epilogue kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a real pain in my ass.
Totally. We'll get there.
It's the Flanosphere. We're working up toward. I think we're still on the runway. We have not left the tarmac.
Right.
We have not ascended into what I would consider peak Flan.
No, we have not. Honestly,
we're not even.
I don't know. I don't know when it's going to happen.
Do you think it's not?
No. I know. See, after watching, you know, this is like the fourth one that we've watched, early Flanagan movies or whatever. I'm like questioning myself. I'm like, I know that I liked The Haunting of Hill House, but was I wrong?
Maybe the haters were right about this guy.
Yeah.
I had the same feeling. And what I've concluded is that he's just not cut out for feature filmmaking, except for Gerald's Game, which was handed to him on a platter.
I mean, Gerald's Game is awesome.
Gerald's Game is great.
I really enjoy Dr. Sleep, too. I thought that's really good.
Hey, let me just, I mean, Honk Shoe, right?
Yeah, I mean.
Honk Shoe MD.
Yeah. Right? I mean, this guy, Before I Wake, Dr. Sleep, this guy needs a nap.
Someone grab this guy a quick nap, yeah, please.
Somebody swaddle this guy.
I will say, maybe the thing that I find most galling about 2016 is Before I Wake.
Uh-huh.
The poster, which is so indebted to Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah, it is definitely a Silence knockoff.
Not only is it, you know, there's no similarities between those two movies. Not that every movie has to be like Silence of the Lambs in some way.
Sure.
But it's just far worse. It's an insult.
Yeah. Well, of course.
It's like, yeah. Did you know butterflies could be this scary?
Butterflies, man, never scary in any situation ever. I don't care if there's like a million of them and they're coming right at you.
What if there's 20 of them?
Yeah.
And they're not. There's a, I forget whose joke this is. There's some comedian who had a joke about they like knew someone who worked at a butterfly pavilion.
Yeah.
And the joke was like getting home from like a long shitty day at the butterfly pavilion and what that would look like.
Yeah.
To your point, I just think there's something so, and I mean, I guess that ends up being the turn, right? I won't call it a twist because
it's
you can call your shot basically from the first scene.
Yeah.
The particulars you maybe can't guess, but obviously it's dead mom, right? Where is it going with that?
I don't know.
But yeah, the butterflies? just that the butterflies, there's no tension there.
Butterflies.
Excuse me. And it's not like a clown situation where you're like, clowns, did you know they're actually scary? Right. There's nothing uncanny about a butterfly.
Right.
Especially when they're so poorly CGI'd.
Yeah. Man, yeah. The not a lot of like scares in this movie here.
No, maybe just a handful of like really cheap jump scares. Really,
that's it. It's the same kind of problem I think we had with Oculus, which it was just like nothing scary here. Some jump scares, mm-hmm. some like music stings. Yeah, that's kind of it. I was getting strong boogeyman vibes from this movie.
Totally looking under the bed.
Yeah. All of that, like all the sleepy time stuff, the monster in the dark kind of thing. And also how underwhelming the monster itself is.
Yeah. Did the boogeyman end up being a trauma monster?
Yeah, of course.
Right. Okay. I can barely remember.
We should make a list on Letterboxd of all of the movies that are just monsters or trauma. The monster was trauma all along.
Yeah. Now this is trauma la la long. This is 2016. So how deep into the what I'm going to call the BC era, actually the AB era. I was going to do something with Babadook, but I couldn't think of a word that started with C.
So after Babadook, is that?
Yeah. I feel like that. So 2014, we're 2 years in. So we're like right in the same, you know, you figure this was like written, shot.
Totally.
Probably roughly around the same time. So maybe this still feels exciting, right?
I guess. I don't know. I think even on like the best, its best day, this is still like just sort of a middle of the road, whatever, forgettable kind of horror movie.
I would agree. I mean, I've never heard of this movie.
Right.
When you said, do you want to record before I wake tomorrow? I said, I guess.
I don't.
Before I who?
I don't know how we're going to record if you're still sleeping, but okay. So ton of people in this movie, huh? A ton of people. King alums.
It's a real Magnolia.
it's an
ensemble cast.
Yeah. We've got Kate Bosworth.
The Boz.
The Boz.
Blue Crush herself.
Yeah.
Is that right? Was she in Blue Crush?
Yeah. Mrs. Justin Long.
Who am I thinking of who's married to Len Wiseman?
Oh, Kate.
Kate Beckinsale.
Yeah.
There we go. No, okay.
But those are, I mean, Kate Bosworth, Kate Beckinsale. It's the same thing.
Whoa. One's Australian or something, right?
I think she's British.
Okay.
Oh, oi there, governor. My name's Kate Beckinsale.
Well, she's a little scamp.
Yeah.
A little street urchin.
we've got, who else? We got Thomas Jane, King alum. This guy, he was in a ton of King movies, like three of them.
He's in he's in maybe the best King adaptation,
1922.
And yeah, and the second best King adaptation.
He's in The Mist, and he's in Dreamcatcher. We love that. Yes. We love that.
Wow, him. So he's in the top three Stephen King adaptations. I didn't even realize
that. Yeah, yeah.
Who else? We got the Gish.
We got Annabeth Gish, who, I mean, again, like just she's in a bunch of King stuff. Mick Garris production specifically.
Mm. The original Mick G.
Yeah. I've been listening to Blank Checks, their Patreon feed or whatever. They're going through all the Terminator movies, and Mick G directed Salvation. That was the one where Christian Bale, like the audio, the recording of him flipping out on that guy.
Yeah. Which turned out to be he was right to do that.
Yeah. Because he was 100% right, and apparently that guy's a problem.
Wait, I mean, wasn't it that kind of the case? Wasn't
no, I'm being serious. Yeah.
Oh, okay, okay,
yeah, yeah.
Okay.
No, he was. Yeah, the it was like.
Well, don't use joke voice.
Sorry, sorry. It's the only voice I have.
Wait, this guy's always on.
No,
he's a real Robin Williams.
Oh, so
ear free.
Yeah, Christian Bale. Whatever. They were in the middle of a scene, and the cinematographer was like adjusting lights and like walking on the set like before nobody called cut or whatever. It was just like, I don't know. It's unprofessional bullshit. Mm. Mick G directed that movie. Mick G, his whole deal was like, I know you guys hate me because like I make trash and my name is Mick G and whatever. But like, trust me, you're going to like this movie. All right. It's going to be hardcore. I'm going to win you guys back. And it came out and everybody's like, nah, man, sucks. And so do you.
you're still Mick G.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, bud. Who else? We got Jacob Tremblay, another King alum from Dr. Sleep. He plays that little baseball boy.
Yeah. He gets honk shooed harder than anybody in that movie.
Hell yeah. He's sleepy. Put that kid to sleep. Who else? I think that's Dash Miyake.
Rendar. Dash Rendar is in this one. From what Star Wars game? Rogue Squadron? No.
I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't play video games. I am a grown up.
Okay. All right. Well, he's also in the extended universe, so you know him from that.
Oh, that I know him from.
Yeah, of course.
I've read all the books. I mean, I just don't play the games.
Well, so who's this guy actually? Dash Mihawk.
Yeah, Mihawk. The only, I mean, I know him, he's been in a bunch of stuff. He's like a character guy. He's a face, you know?
Yeah.
He was in the Punisher Warzone movie. And fucking Thomas Jane was the Punisher in a different movie. Isn't that fun for them? I wonder if they talked about that.
That's kind of fun. Wait, did they both play...
He was
Punisher.
No. Thomas Jane was Punisher. This guy Dash was like a, I don't know, like a doofy detective, like sidekick kind of guy.
He played Officer Doofy in Punisher.
Yeah, yeah.
War Crime.
Yeah, Punisher War Crime.
We also got some MF in flannelum action here.
Yeah, yeah.
None other than Courtney Bell. The one who started it all in Absentia.
Absentia.
Justin Gordon, also from Absentia, played the like dickhead detective, right? That's him.
Oh, where is he?
Is it? I don't know. I actually don't. He played the doctor, I guess? I didn't even notice. I just see him in the credits here.
Okay.
My Mick B.
Oh, yeah. Was he the one guy with like, he wasn't like the boyfriend character or whatever. He was the other detective with like the glasses and like
the, yeah, yeah, the one who was chewing gum.
Yeah, the gum guy.
So much gum.
Yeah,
yeah, love that guy.
Yeah, yeah, that gum is doing all the work.
Yeah, that honestly, that movie is still the best one we've watched so far by like no short measure. Yeah, I think
you're right. I think it's maybe like the most original kind of idea. And even with like, I don't know, like haunted mirror, that's like dumb. This is like,
no, it's a, what are you talking about? It's a portable Shining hotel.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a portable
Overlook hotel.
Right. Hush is like, oh, what if there was like, what if it was like a Michael Myers movie, but, you know, and I just did everything differently and, and it doesn't really work. There's a reason that those movies are so formulaic.
Yeah,
they work.
Right. That's the thing. It seems like he keeps taking, you know, after Absentia, which like, here's what I'll say. Writing a completely original thing every time, that's a hard thing to do. This is like we were talking about with Christopher Nolan, where it's like the ideas just get more and more contrived because he feels like he has to have like a new, like mind blowing, like, whoa, man.
Yeah, yeah.
What if? Yes, what if indeed, Christopher Nolan?
But it, but all of Christopher Nolan's things are just like, all right, well, what if you went, you dreamed, but like, what if you went to sleep, but it was like a really deep sleep?
it's all sort of based around what if time were different?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
His whole career is just like
Interstellar.
I think time could be more different.
Yeah.
I think I got an idea.
Yeah. We don't, you know, this is Godfella. He doesn't have a monopoly on time. I can manipulate time too.
And I think similarly, Flanagan is just kind of like, is like, not like, I don't know, because Absentia doesn't really do any of this sort of like twisty, you know, he's not really trying to subvert any expectations. It's just like a cool, simple idea of like, what if you disappeared and then you came back?
Yeah. No.
And what if it was all because of the worst bug you could imagine?
Yeah, the biggest silverfish ever. No, you're right. Yeah, Absentia seems to be the best one so far. Oculus, not my cup of tea. I think poorly executed. Same thing with Hush. And I think same thing with this. I think, you know, for the first like 45 minutes, hour of this movie, I was like kind of on, I was on board. I was like, all right, you know, I get it. The boy's dreams come to life and what happens when he has nightmares and all that shit, right?
How about the reveal that he's going to Charles Xavier's school for gifted youths or whatever, right? He's just an X-Men at the end of it.
I have a problem with like sleep kind of movies. Like this is like kind of like a Nightmare on Elm Street kind of thing, right? Where you go to sleep and the bad guy is in the dreams, right? And in these movies, the answer is always like, no, we just have to stay awake. Like, you know, you can't stay awake forever, right? Like that is a short term solution. You gotta think of something else. Mm-hmm. And this kid does the same thing. He's like, you know, he's got his Coca-Colas, his caffeine pills, whatever he's popping.
Yeah, and I like that the cola, like I'm sure it's just like a rights issue that it wasn't like Coke or something.
Yeah.
But like it looked like it must have been like European cola or something. It looked like not even from this country.
Yeah. It also looked enormous in that little boy's hand.
Yes, it did.
So all right, let's get into this. This guy.
Well,
what?
One thing I wanted to mention is that this film is a co-writing credit with a fellow named Jeff Howard, who is something of a Flanagan collaborator from this point, from Oculus on.
Okay.
He co-wrote Oculus, Ouija, Origin of Evil, Gerald's Game, Haunting of Hill House, even our beloved Midnight Mass.
Wow.
Writing credit on. So what the hell happened here?
Yeah. Well, I mean, sometimes you gotta like, I don't know.
Learn how to write a script.
Yeah, you get better, you know?
Yeah. And really the issue with this one, like I know, and we, of course we'll get into it, but one other thing I want to say is like, okay, I'll save it. I'll just save it.
All right.
This doesn't have the same dialogue issues for the most part that the other ones have.
No, you're right. It doesn't. much more like streamlined with the dialogue, except for the last 2 minutes,
which clearly freaking Jeff fell asleep and Mike Flanagan cracked his knuckles, got behind the typewriter there. Like, so, I added a couple pages of you explaining everything we just saw.
Okay. So cold open, guy loves a cold open, you know. We see Dash Miyake.
Much like a necrophiliac.
Jesus.
What?
What? Why?
Go on. Go on. Cold open.
Cold open. Dash Miyake as, what's his name in this? Is Whelan. So Whelan walks into young Cody's room. And he's clearly distraught. The lights are all off in the house, and he's like, and he's got a gun in his hand, and he's gonna shoot that little boy. And he's like, and then he hears a noise, and then, you know, the boy wakes up, and then it, you know, cuts to credits or whatever. That's the opening scene. And then we're introduced to Thomas Jane and Kate Bosworth's Mark and Jesse. And Mark and Jesse had a child, but they let that boy drown in the bathtub. Let it happen.
Yes.
No, they had a son, and then he drowned in the bathtub. And they couldn't have any more kids, which is, I mean, obviously for Mike Flanagan, that is a nightmare to not be able to get a girl pregnant.
not be able to get a beautiful woman like Kate Bosworth pregnant.
Yeah,
that's the real horror story.
Exactly.
There are 10 earlier drafts of this script.
Yeah,
where people just keep walking into a room and seeing her flat stomach and screaming.
Yeah, and the whole thing is her just saying like, "I can't get pregnant," and everybody going. So they cannot get pregnant again. So they are trying
to. And that was like a 200-page script.
Yeah,
by the way.
Yeah. I heard that they shot that script, but they had to cut it all down. They had to cut all that out. Flanagan just saved all that footage for himself.
Yeah, financing fell through. I don't know what to tell you.
Here, Kate Bosworth, why don't you try on this fake tummy here?
He's always quote, shooting screen tests, yeah. Isn't he?
Yeah. It's like this picture, like an old Hollywood creep, you know, like a casting couch situation, but he doesn't want to have sex with them. He just wants them to be pregnant.
Imagine the casting couch has stirrups.
Oh, boy.
Anyway, if this is your first episode in, we have established that Mike Flanagan is addicted to pregnant women.
He loves a prego.
He, in fact, brings one out of retirement to be post-pregnant, postpartum.
Who's post?
Courtney Bell.
Oh, yeah. That's true.
The original.
Yeah.
What do they call it? Like a scream queen. What can we call these instead?
Oh boy. Instead of a like scream. Instead of a scream.
Sonogram mems.
Yeah, sonogram mems.
Baby ladies?
Yeah, mothers.
Oh, okay.
But it's not, he's not into, you know, moms. He's into specifically pregnant women. He likes the 9 months that they are pregnant. So Mark and Jesse, they go to the adoption agency. Annabeth Gish is like the person in charge, and she's telling them about Cody, and you know, Cody's a sweet kid. He's had a rough go of it. You know, he's been through a few foster homes.
He's a bit like the boy from Twin Peaks, Andy and Dix. What's that kid's name again?
Oh,
Little Nicky.
Little Nicky, yes.
Of course. He's a bit of a Little Nicky.
He is kind of a Little Nicky. I mean, as this movie goes on, it just gets more and more insane that nobody is looking at this kid like, hey, man, you know what the common denominator in all of these stories is? You know who else was there on at every one of these occasions? So, you know, they get, you know, approved or whatever to foster Cody with the intent to adopt him, right? And there's a scene where, you know, Annabeth Gish, she brings Cody over to their house, and he's got this, like, shoebox with him. And at first he's like, you know, Mark is like, oh, I could take that. And he doesn't want to give it over to him. And then he hands it to him, and he's like, all right. And, like, you know, like, Mark and Jesse seem like very excited, very like sweet parents. They're excited to have a kid. Obviously there was a lot of, you know, the loss of a child, awful. And
they got, they're moving on. They're in therapy.
Yeah, yeah.
They're like, you know, group therapy.
Mark doesn't go. Jesse goes.
They got a standing shower installed. Just kidding.
It's terrible. No, but Mark did install some like handrails in the shower, which that's, I don't know, whatever. you know, there's a scene where they're like showing him around Cody around the house, and they bring him to his room. And he's like, I love this room. And I'm sitting there like, buddy, you better take it easy. You're about to be, you just got out of a room with, what's that girl's name from the movie Room?
Oh,
out of one room into another, you know,
He's being typecast already.
Yeah. Brie Larson.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I've never seen it.
Me either. But it's about them being trapped in a room.
And they love it.
They don't. Right. But
they should have. The line reading should have been, I love this room. Hey. Now this is a room.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So, you know, they're very excited. And they're, he's like, well, Mark is like, you can, you know, we left it sort of blank so you could like do whatever you want. You know, we'll paint it whatever color, you could design it however you want. He's like, oh, that's so fun. And there are curtains that are hanging up, and it, you know, he's looking at the curtains and there are butterflies all over me. And Mark's like, yeah, I just found those. We put them up, but you know, we could change those. That's not like anything. And he's like, no, I like them. And we come to find out that young Cody is, he's obsessed with butterflies. He just loves them.
He's a bit of a crazy town.
Yeah. He's right. He does come from crazy town. My forwarding address is crazy town.
Oh, this poor boy.
So, yes. And yeah, it must be the first night. Right, that he's in the house, like Mark and Jesse are on the couch or watching TV or whatever, and she kind of dozes off, and all of a sudden they see a bunch of butterflies in their living room, and there's like 20 or 30 of them in there, and they're flying all around, and they're like, what is going on?
You would not believe your eyes. 20 to 30 butterflies.
Yeah. Did you like these butterflies again?
Yeah, I thought they looked great. I thought, why spend the same amount of money on renting 20 to 30 butterflies for a day?
Right.
When you could simply have someone CGI them in and have it look like shit.
Yeah.
But you know, they had to be CGI. We needed the insert shot where the gross bug bites Bosworth's thumb and it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Like, right? Like, did you think, oh, she's infected now. When someone gets bitten with something, it means something.
It means a vampire is about.
Maybe she could have been a canker man.
She could have. So,
did you like when the canker man said, "I'm Ron Burgundy"?
Yeah, I like that. I thought it was funny. Mm.
When Kate Bosworth defeats the canker man by handing him milk on a hot day.
Oh, and the canker man is like,
bad choice.
I like it.
Oh, he likes it this time?
Yeah, he likes it this time.
Oh, wow. Talk about subverting expectations.
He's a real sick fuck, this canker man.
That's true. That is true.
I'm sorry. Before young Cody goes to sleep, Jesse goes in to say goodnight, and she says, "I found your little box of stimulants," which is what she says.
And she and this kid, he's acting like he doesn't know what she's talking about. What's that word? Stimulant?
Yeah.
Gee, lady, I don't know. I don't know. That's a big word for such a little boy. Shut the fuck up,
shut
lady.
Shut the fuck up, lady. She's
scratching at his arms.
Yeah.
You're talking so slow. Sorry, go
she
ahead.
Says she says that you're safe in this house. You don't have to worry about, you know, falling asleep or whatever. So that's when, you know, they go downstairs, Jesse and Mark, and you know, the butterflies happen. And they got all like, well, this is amazing. And Mark like grabs a glass and he catches one of them, and Kate Bosworth's like, what, where are these coming from? Like, and the door is open, like the sliding glass door. Is that a Flanagan trope, sliding glass doors?
I suppose
she closes the
trope, right?
Two makes a trope.
Does that still apply with Flanagan, or is
it applies
just with
everything? I think it applies.
In my opinion, the smaller the sample size, the better. none of this mass produced, industrialized sample sizes.
I want
bespoke, artisanal, handcrafted sample sizes of two or less data points.
Two or less.
Could be one. Right. Could be none. Could be pure conjecture.
So, butterflies are about. And then
scary.
And then all of a sudden they like disappear. And the one that Mark had in the glass, it's gone. And they're like, what the fuck just happened? And then they see Cody come downstairs, and he goes to the fridge and he grabs a Coke and he goes back up to his room.
He's jonesing.
Kid's jonesing. He's got a real Coke problem.
Someday soon.
Someday, hopefully.
The sliding you mentioned, they closed the door, and that's the moment where the butterflies disappear.
Yeah.
That's just a little misdirection, right?
It is.
That didn't mean anything?
It means nothing.
Also want to mention,
yeah,
when the butterflies disappear, that also looks stupid.
Yeah.
They sort of like turn to mist.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know, some fucking... like CW graphics.
1,000,000%. I was so shocked to learn that this was not like a Netflix, like a streaming service movie.
Is it?
Looks.
I thought it was.
I mean, Netflix released it, but they didn't produce. They're not listed as a production company unless.
Oh, you're right.
They were using like a different name or something. But they just distributed it.
Were you impressed with Danny Elfman's score? You know, Danny Elfman from other famous scores.
Yeah. I would not have guessed this was a Danny Elfman score. I didn't think about the music even. I couldn't tell you
not one thing about it.
One note from it, even though you played the like
the little
Before I Wake overture at the
Oh man. So that boy Cody, does he go to school yet? Is that? No, it's the next day, whatever they're, you know, they're doing more stuff with him. They're showing him around and whatever. And He asks about the picture on the wall, which is of their son, Sean, who died. And they're, you know, he's asking questions about him. And, you know, that's a little setup for later when this boy goes to sleep again. And this time around, first we see the butterflies and then we see Sean.
This I thought was good.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
Little boy just smiling, scary.
Yeah. I mean, it's weird and, you know, creepy. Obviously, the boy is dead. Jesse and Mark, they jump up and they're like, they touch him and he's like real, you know. Jesse hugs him and then Cody wakes up and Sean disappears. I like how this is all just projections of Cody's imagination or dreams or whatever, right? So, like, because he doesn't know, you know, what Sean sounds like, he doesn't talk. He just knows him from that one picture. So he's wearing the same outfit. The same thing, like, you know, later on when, the guy Dash, or what's it, Whelan. When Whelan is talking about his wife, and his wife is like,
"Oh, that was that." I also loved that. Yeah. Was, man, yeah. It feels like they had a couple. Here. They had a couple good ideas and no idea of what to surround them with.
Yes. Well, we'll get there. That's fine.
That's honestly like the best scare in the movie is like looking at that lady's horrible face.
Yeah, her face, it looks like a mannequin's face. It's like it looks very plasticky and like featureless. And it's because, you know, he doesn't, he's just a young boy and he doesn't remember what she looks like. So he can't like project an actual like true image of her.
Right. And then like the little twist in the voiceover of Whelan being like, he didn't even remember what she looked like.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's good, man. That's good stuff.
That is good stuff.
Yeah. And that's it. That's it for good stuff. I think.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe there might be some good stuff. Maybe there's more good stuff.
I mean, that is the classic trajectory of this show, is we start off being like, that was total trash. And by the end of it, we're like, kind of like that trash.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. Yeah. before I wake. Jeez. So they... They're hanging out in the living room, the three of them, right? And Kate Bosworth, at this point, I'm like, oh, I think she might be the fucking villain here. She's like, oh, do you want to see a video of Sean? And Cody's like, sure.
And yeah, this was insanely fucked up.
So they play, she plays like a DVD of like a birthday party that, you know, they had for Sean, where Sean is talking and all this stuff.
I hate to correct you, but it was Christmas.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Only matters because the butterflies tree, are a different color later.
Yeah.
And we wouldn't want to miss that. The butterflies.
You're right. But like, so Jesse is showing Cody these things. So they like implant in his brain so that later on, like, he can project Cody again and she could talk to him.
Yeah.
That's crazy. That's crazy stuff. And Mark is like, he knows it too. And he doesn't say anything here, says it later. But so later on that night, like, Mark is like, all right, let's go to bed. It's bedtime. And she's like, I'm going to stay up for a little longer. And he's like, why? What are we doing here? And she's like, he needs to sleep and I want to stay up. And it's just like, this is weird.
Probably nothing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like this sort of, there's like I don't know how intentional this is, but it did make me think of like Christmas Eve kids trying to stay up late to see Santa.
Sure.
It's like an interesting little reversal of that.
Yeah, especially with the Christmas tree that pops up there. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
So yeah, they while they're having this discussion, a Christmas tree appears out of nowhere and butterflies are flying around, but now these butterflies have like Christmas lights. They're glowing in different Christmas colors, like and then the little boy, Sean, he appears and right, he says like something. I don't remember what he says.
Yeah, he's just saying whatever he said on the tape.
Right, that's what it is.
Right, and again, like I think this is all good stuff. I like that Jesse then like fills in her part of what she says on the videotape because she's clearly watched it so many times.
Right.
After he died. So she's like trying to have this little interaction and then he sort of like cuts out and reappears by the tree.
Yeah.
Because that's what happens on the tape, right? It's like him coming down the stairs and then cut to him opening presents.
Yep.
Yes.
So we also see like the butterflies are sort of swarming around in the hallway outside of Cody's room. And there are two that are lit up and the rest of them are just sort of black. And then they form into a humanoid person, and the two glowing ones are the eyes, and it walks into
now
Cody's
that
room and he
is a philanthrope.
Oh yeah, the glowing eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he does it every time.
Can't get enough of it.
Now this thing comes into Cody's room and whispers in his ear while he's sleeping. And he's like, "I'll always be with you."
Ah,
and wakes up Cody scared. Ah, all this stuff. I'm like, I'm still on board here.
Yeah, even though the monster looks like doo doo ass, looks so insanely bad.
It does look really bad. It looks like it reminded me of like Mr. Oogie Boogie from Nightmare Before Christmas a little bit.
That's giving it credit for the amount of texture and rendering it has.
Yes, it doesn't actually look like that. If you know, took away all of its sort of features and just made it like a person shaped.
Yeah, I could see that. It reminded me of, this is such a ridiculous thing to admit to, but sometimes on Instagram, I get recommended these videos that are like some guy's like CGI little horror, like 20-second things. It's just like creepy guys.
Yeah, yeah.
And you forgive it because it's like, well, a guy just like made this real quick, and it's more about like the it's mostly about the sound design. Let's be real, in these little videos. But it's just like most slapped together like creepy pasta kind of nonsense.
Totally. Yeah,
yeah.
It does. Yeah, it feels like a creepy pasta or something.
Now, one thing, the eyes also, it's like they're like sort of just cavernous black eyes with like, is it little eyes in the middle or you can see all the way through?
I thought it was like just sort of cavernous and they were like little,
like when yeah, like when SpongeBob gets dried out.
I don't know that reference, but yeah. I'm not a SpongeBob guy. I know it's disappointing to a lot of people.
Is it?
Sarah is always like, "Oh, it's like this episode of SpongeBob." I'm like, I've seen like four episodes of SpongeBob.
It probably is like that episode of SpongeBob. Okay. Well, look at the one I have pulled up here.
Okay.
Real quick.
All right.
The one that this one
yeah.
here.
No, it's exactly like that.
Yep.
It's like that episode of SpongeBob.
They do that so many times because it's funny.
Yeah. Well, it is funny.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So, Cody goes to school. He's drawing pictures of like, he's drawing the canker man. He calls him the canker man. And the girl that sits next to him, this nice little girl, she's like, you know, friend, kind of like friendly with him and stuff. And she's like, "What's that?" And he tells her. And all this happens, right? And then, like, out of nowhere, the principal comes by and he's like, "I found Tate," or whatever. And,
oh yeah,
and this, I get it, like, it's so like unclear. They're just like, I found him doing something bad.
Oh, great. Yeah.
And Tate is just like, he's a bully. He has zero lines, does not say a word. I wonder if they just paid him as an extra because he doesn't say anything.
Maybe it's like a Singing in the Rain situation. He has a really high-pitched little voice.
It's probably it.
Hey, what are you doing? You're drawing the canker, man. Knock it off. I'm going to slap your butterfly out of your head.
I wish that was his voice.
I'm going to wallop you. I got a big fist here. I'm going to wallop you in the jaw.
I got a big fist here.
I got a big fist here with your name on it. Big old knuckle sandwich.
I was just going to say. You know what I brought for lunch? A knuckle sandwich right for you.
You want my Hertz donut? That one was always such a stretch to me. It seemed like a generational divide. Like maybe people used to say the word donut differently.
Oh, totally.
Right?
Yeah.
It'd be like, it's like, you want a Hertz donut? Hertz, don't it? Come on.
Come on.
Come on. Clearly someone heard knuckle sandwich and they're like, I want my own one of those.
Yeah. All right. What's another food that I could use for violence? Let's see.
Of course, the Hertz donut.
The Hertz donut. So Mark picks up Cody from school. When he gets home, there are more pictures of Sean on the wall. And Cody's like, he goes in the other room or whatever. And Mark's like, are we going to talk about this? And she doesn't say a word. And then later on, after he goes to bed, he's like, what are you doing? Like, this is abuse. Like, we are supposed to be like, fostering this child and you're using him to like, see, our son. Like, and she gets all offended. She's like, abuse. I'm trying to, I think he could help us heal and all this stuff. Dan, what's your opinion of this?
I think Jesse's a real, real low down, no good Nick here.
Kind of, right?
I mean, like, that's very ungenerous. She's going through a lot.
I mean,
so it's like,
wait a second though. Like, what? 100% she's going through a lot. Absolutely, right? But you have to imagine that time has passed since Sean died. Not that it's something like you get over like that.
What if it was like 2 weeks?
I mean, yes. I don't think the movie does a good job of illustrating like how much time has passed, but there's no way that the adoption agency is like, oh, your son just died? Let me give you another one.
if nothing else, it's bare minimum, like, I don't know. We know that they tried to get pregnant multiple times and couldn't. Right. So you got to figure that's what, like 18 weeks, 24 weeks?
Right.
Yeah. Give it a few goes.
Yeah, yeah. I'm surprised Mike Flanagan didn't go into detail on how much they tried to get pregnant and just couldn't. Visits to the, the gynecologist.
He has her stand next to pregnant women to like check to see if she's also pregnant.
It's pretty, it's super fucked up.
It is. And it's one thing if it keeps escalating or something, or if something comes of this sort of like obsession in more of like a Pet Sematary kind of way, right? Where it's like the grief
that's what
consumes you.
Yes. That's what I thought. That's where I thought we were going.
Yeah. In fact, that is not where we're going. No, we're not really going anywhere.
No, no, we're not. So the next day at school, Cody brings a jar with a butterfly. He wants to show his friend, the little girl. And Tate comes over and he knocks it out of his hand and breaks it and kills a butterfly. And Cody pushes him on the ground.
Hey, what are you doing?
Yay.
I'm the bully. I thought I was the bully. You don't get push me down.
Yeah. Again, this kid, Tate, who's supposed to be the bully, doesn't like, besides, he knocks the jar out of the kid's hand, but he's not like a bully. You know, there's no.
We gave for years and years, we gave Stephen King so much shit.
Yeah.
Gave Stephen King so much shit for the like apex bully, like lunatic.
Yeah.
Switchblade always up to somebody's neck kind of bully.
Yeah.
I know these kids are 8, so you can't have that, but like.
But I don't know. You could
give this kid some damage, dude.
If. Wait a
second. Have him rip the butterfly's wings off, like this song by Bam Margera's favorite band, Him.
Him. Yeah, I was going to say CKY, but yes, Him. No. They go to class or whatever. At a certain point, it's like recess, and everybody's going to go outside, and Tate is just out in the hallway waiting for Cody. And Cody talks to the teacher. He's like, I don't feel good. And teacher's just like, all right, why don't you just stay in here and like, you know, rest or whatever. She's like, and I'm then she's run out real yeah. quick.
I'll be right back. I just have to leave you unattended for a couple minutes.
Yeah. And then Tate sneaks in. And at this point, Cody has dozed off at his desk. And who appears but the Canker Man? And the Canker Man gobbles up Tate. We don't actually see what happens. We just see him like sort of like standing over him and like attacking him. And then when Cody wakes up, Tate is gone.
More like 8.
Yeah.
He got eight. Also, he's 8 years old.
Yeah, all these things are correct.
This movie's got layers, dude.
No, it's layered. I think it's terrible.
It's pretty bad. Yeah.
The more I talk about it now, I'm like, ah, man, this is like, yikes. Like this scene. This is like, I think where it sort of takes a turn for me. Like at, you know, whatever. Canker Man comes out, gobbles up Tate, which I'm like. All right, you told me that he was a terrible bully and whatever, but I didn't really see that. So I kind of just feel bad for this little boy, Tate, you know?
Yeah. Which, like, again, the kids being so young, I do feel like it's a hard needle to thread.
Yeah.
Right? I feel like maybe they just set themselves up for failure with this one because it's like, you almost like, and knowing like what the monster is and stuff, like you don't necessarily want it to feel like a, I don't know.
No,
I don't know.
But
yeah.
But like, I don't know. We're talking about Flanagan because of like his connection with Stephen King. Right. And like you said, with the bullies in Stephen King stories or whatever, they're these apex bullies. They're out for actual blood. Right. And, I don't know if they aged up Tate, you know, made him like a couple grades older.
There's a 16-year-old terrorizing the elementary school.
Well, no, but like if you,
no, I know
if you
he got left back.
Yeah, like you age the kid up, you make him bigger or whatever. You make him like more of a menace to like other kids. Like it's still that thing like in It when like you know, the bullies.
Yeah, he gets sucked ass first into the pipe.
Right. And you're like, Jesus, like, that's dark. You know, even though that bully is a psychopath or whatever, it's still pretty dark.
He's just a boy.
Yeah, he's just a boy. So
all this kid did was slap a butterfly out of his hand.
Right. And not say a word. So Jesse picks Tate or picks Cody up. Nobody's picking Tate up. Picks Cody up, and the police are there talking to the teacher and like the vice principal, and this is where it turns for me. Like Cody's just like, all right, can we go home now? I really want to go home now or whatever. And Jesse's like, okay, like what in what world do they just like let that kid go without talking to him first?
Right, the last person to see him alive.
Right. Well, one of the last people. When the canker man is gobbling up Tate, that little girl is standing by the door. She was coming to check on Cody, and she sees it all happen, and she just gets the shit scared out of her.
Yeah. That trajectory is that's sad. It does that at least felt like there's some like emotional truth to it, where it's like the first time we see her in class with Cody, like Cody's drawing butterflies and stuff. She's like, something's missing. She puts a little antenna on it.
Yeah.
And that's very sweet. And then the next time Cody's like writing his manifesto, scribbling out canker men.
Yep.
And she's like, that boy ain't right.
Yep.
And then the third beat is that she sees the canker man.
Right.
Absorb Tate.
Yeah. So later on that evening, Jesse is trying to stay awake, but so is Cody. Cody takes all the coffee. And I have to note that I have that same coffee pot and that same brand of coffee.
Ooh, you better watch out.
I know.
You better be careful.
That was the scariest part for me. I was like, whoa.
This movie feels very lived in.
Yeah. But it turns out that Cody took the coffee and he's just drinking it. Like, he pours it into a glass of water and just starts.
Oh, yeah. Drinking coffee grounds.
Cowboy coffee. It's what we call
Turkish.
It.
Turkish delight.
Yeah. So he stays awake. But then he has like a waking nightmare where he is dreaming while being awake. And he sees like the corpse of Tate under his bed. It's like dragging him under the bed. He's screaming. And then I forget who it is, which parent it is. I think it's Jesse, runs in and like gets him before anything happens. Then Jesse, who is a nurse, right? She goes to work the next day and she talks to her doctor boss, whatever. And has him prescribe little Cody some Ambien.
A child's dose, though. He's very clear about that.
Yeah, Flintstones Ambien. the cops show up at their house. You know, they want to talk to Cody. But, you know, I don't know if they actually talk to him or he's told to, like, come back or whatever. But nothing happens with the police. Mark and Cody, they build a race car bed. You know, they're the three of them are standing around in the kitchen, and Mark and Jesse are talking about something, and like Cody interrupts them. He wants them to stop talking about whatever they're talking about, and he says, "How did Sean die?" And it like really snaps them out, and he's just like, "We'll tell you about that later. Like, why don't we?"
When we keep
this moving here. So in the meantime, Jesse, she takes one of those pills. She puts it in a nice warm glass of milk and she brings milk and cupcake or not cupcake brownies to Mark and Cody. And the moment when she's like, she's handing it over and then she does the old like switcheroo to Mark. She's like, no, you take this one and Cody, you take that one. This at this point, I'm like, this is like Munchausen by proxy kind of shit. You're like, you're really like fucking with this kid.
Yeah.
But she drugs him. He goes to sleep and, while he's asleep, he's having this horrible nightmare and has a dream about the canker man. They see the Christmas tree, I think, right? And there's like this almost like a Evil Dead, like Book of the Dead style like present. It's like wrapped, it looks like human skin.
Evil present,
right.
Clear and present danger.
Yeah, clear and present danger. Beans, what the hell are you doing?
You invited this into your life just now. I saw you pick her up.
I did pick her up, but now she's being a scooch. No, so what? The box opens up, and it's Sean. He pokes his head out, but then he disappears. And this one, like, he vomits up like this black shit.
And so this is after they tell Cody how he died.
Oh yeah,
because that's what it is, right? Oh. It's like water.
Yeah,
who's that? Is that this thing's Blackwater?
I don't know.
Oh, Blackwater, keep on rolling. Doobie Brothers?
Yeah, it's probably the Doobie Brothers.
All right. Well, in that case, you give them the Doobie Brothers special.
So, they the little boy Sean vomits up all this like black water, and bugs start coming out of his mouth. But then he vanishes, and these hands sort of like poke out and like grab onto the edge of the box from inside, and the canker man comes out, and Mark, he runs upstairs, and he tries to wake up Cody, and then Jesse runs in, and she's like, he's not going to wake up, and he's like, and Mark's like, what did you do? And
I give him some Ambien. Whatever. The doctor said I should. The doctor prescribing that, like, sight unseen too.
It's crazy.
Right? He's just kind of. She's like, he can't really sleep so good. He's like, I'll give him some Ambien.
Yeah, yeah. Just why don't you give him a few pills, get him hooked.
Now, granted, it's pretty bad. Kids up for like days on end.
Sure, but also, you know what else is bad?
Giving a little boy Ambien?
The damn canker man.
Oh, well, the canker man. One of the great villains of cinema.
Of course. So the canker man is running. I did like this part. The canker man's coming upstairs towards the room. Jesse and Mark are both in there. They're like trying to barricade the door. Mark like slaps Cody in the face to wake him up, which he wakes up for a second. And the canker man goes away, but then he goes right back to sleep, and the canker man comes back.
Yeah,
you know what? That moment.
I thought he should have reappeared much closer, like Nightcrawler style.
Oh shit!
Not the X-Men. Not Jake Gyllenhaal. No.
Okay.
But you know, it's like that's a good opportunity for a jump scare. It's just like kid falls back asleep. He's right in your face. Right in your grill.
Yeah. So what Canker Man busts open the door. Mark tries to defend Jesse and Cody, and he starts like wrestling with this Canker Man. And the Canker Man, he can't be wrestled with. He's a figment of this boy's imagination.
That's right.
And the Canker Man absorbs Mark, basically. He just like sort of, you know, absorbs him into his body and engulfs him completely. And, you know, Jesse runs up and she gets hit in the face and gets knocked out. And when she comes to, Cody is calling 911 and, the cops are on their way. But Mark is gone now. Mark is dead.
Yep. Yep. Mark died. Real quick, did you like the effect of him getting absorbed? I thought that looked pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't look bad. I like the idea of it more than the execution, really.
Yeah, I feel the same, actually. It's a cool idea.
Yeah.
It's a good, scary idea. And I will say, in terms of like what it ends up being, like what the canker man ends up being.
Yeah.
It's very apropos.
Sure.
Very canker. Apropos. Yeah.
But Mark dies and it seems to have no sort of impact, on anyone.
Anybody. Yeah.
You would think that like Jesse, who has, you know, been married to Mark for however long, they lost a child together and now she has lost her husband to,
you know what though? She, she does, we find out, blame him for their son's death.
She does say that. She's like, you know, I'm not going to, what did she say? Like, I'm not going to.
Oh, yeah. Like
let
when
you
Mark,
take him away from me again or something like that.
Yeah. When Mark is like, you have to stop drugging the boy or whatever. Yeah. You know, stop manipulating him to use him as your personal DVD player.
Right.
She does say, I'm not going to let you take him from me again or something.
And he's like, again? Whoa.
And even that moment feels underplayed.
Definitely.
Like, what a fucked up thing
to say. A really fucked up thing to say.
It's insanely fucked. Like, I think what's so surprising about this whole film here is that, like, the stakes are, like, child death and parent death, and it all just sort of like rolls off. Like,
yeah, it has no effect. Like, as a viewer, like, you don't feel anything for anyone here. You should be feeling a lot more for these people that are like going through all this.
Uh-oh, what if it's just us? What if we're just callous?
No, it's the children who are wrong. So fucking Jesse puts on her Nancy Drew hat and she's going to do some detective work of her own.
It's about that time in the story where someone has to go do detective work and figure out what's going on.
Yeah. So first she goes to the adoption agency. She talks to Annabeth Gish, so they've taken the kid away now, taken him back to the, what is it? Like the foster care?
Place. Yeah.
I don't know what it's called.
He's once more a ward of the state.
Yes. So Jesse goes there. She wants to talk to Annabeth Gish, like, and Annabeth does not want any part of it. She's like, no, you fucking, you drugged him. And, you know, your husband, nobody knows where your husband is. Like, this is no way. And at first, like, she's not receptive to it at all. She takes out the file, leaves it on the desk, and then turns her back. And Jesse takes this opportunity to sneak away with the file. And Annabeth Gish is just like, I never want to, like, you know, don't ever come back. I never want to see you again. She's like, all right. But when Jesse is going through this file, right, there are like, there's at least three couples that have like mysterious disappearances to them.
Mm-hmm.
How are we not like investigating this further? this is crazy.
And again, that is like the thing Absentia gets right, is it just like takes the idea of like, what if all the people who disappear go to the same place, or like it was all one thing.
Yes.
This is like, it's too specific. It's like, we know the place, we know the thing. It's the boy.
It's the boy.
Someone stop that boy.
Yeah.
And someone has tried.
Yes. So Jesse goes to a like a mental facility, and she goes to see Whelan, who is committed, and she asks him about the kid. He's being like kind of like cryptic in everything that he's saying, right? And then she's like, fine, I'm out of here or whatever. And he's like, no, I'll. And then he tells the story about how, like, you know, same thing, foster kid, they wanted to adopt, so they were fostering him. They'd fostered kids before, and then like they saw the butterflies, they did that too. And then one night, like, him and his wife are in bed, and the canker man comes in and like attacks his wife and like absorbs her, and he tries to stop it and he can't stop it. And when, and then she just disappears. So that's when he, you know, the cold open that we saw where he was going to shoot Cody, you know, I guess he got stopped before that, but that's, you know, where it all came from, you know?
Right. Yeah, and as he's talking to Jesse, he's saying basically like, you'd be doing him and the world a favor by killing him.
And right. And we get that scene where he says, like, he didn't even remember what she looked like about his wife, and like how, you know, he would remember bits and pieces of it. And like, you know, and then there's that creepy shot where he's hugging like this plastic looking face.
Yeah. And the color is wrong. She's like kind of golden or something.
Yeah.
Bit of a 3PO.
Yeah, she's a 3PO.
Oh my.
Yeah, a bit of a dandy robot. Yeah. you know, later that night at the orphanage, I guess, you know, they put Cody down for bed, and you know, all of the same shit happens. First we get the butterflies, right? And then the damn canker man, you know, comes out. See, this is like, I don't know. I don't know. Like, what? It's so anticlimactic, this whole thing, right? So Jesse goes to this orphanage, right? And she's like, she has, she looked into Cody's mother, like who his biological mother was, found out a little bit more information about her. She was able to like go to, I guess, I don't know if it's like their old house or something. But she like, based on this, she thinks that she has an idea of how to help Cody. So when she goes to the orphanage, Cody has already been like put down for bed, and his dreams have run rampant. And basically, yeah, like
he was given like an injection of a sedative.
Right. They're drugging the kid too.
Yeah. Everyone's got the same idea.
Yeah. Get this kid high. So Jesse shows up and like, you know, it's creepy and whatever, and there are butterflies everywhere. But then she like finds Annabeth Gish and like she's like cocooned to the wall. For some reason,
Jesse mutters something under her breath that is supposed to make it make sense. I can't even remember what she says, but it's
it
so
doesn't
like
make sense.
Right. She's like, oh, yes, of course.
Maybe it's a she's in a chrysalis or something.
Yeah, but it's like, yeah, I don't know. She says something else about like why it's happening. I can't remember what. Whatever.
So, you know, she's walking through this building and she sees like, there's a bathroom in there, and she goes in there, and in the bathtub is, you know, the ghost of Sean. Sean's eyes are like missing. It's just like these black holes.
Cankerman eyes.
Yeah. Canker eyes. There's a moment where like she slips and she's on the ground and the little boy is like looking over her, and a drop of water from his eye socket like lands on her head.
Ew.
Yeah. Gross. Then there's she continues walking. She sees Cody on the couch, and then like a woman, like with sort of like, again, with like the black eyes or whatever, comes over and does like some weird sort of manipulating of his head and like twisting it around and getting like her fingers like into his skull and shit. But this is all dream stuff. Neither of these people are real.
Gives him canker eyes.
Yeah. Gives him canker eyes. Then we see canker eyed Mark. He pops in for a second.
Yeah. He pops in for a second. He doesn't really do anything.
He does nothing. And then, so she approaches Cody's room. She's like down at the end of the hallway. The room is at the other end, and the canker man is standing in the doorway, right? And she stands there, and the canker man screams. He does one of these screams that means like nothing. It's the same thing as like the boogeyman, where it just sounds like, I don't know, like a, I don't know, like just an animal, right?
Yeah, pterodactyl.
Pterodactyl voice. And it starts running towards Jesse. And Jesse takes out this like stuffed butterfly that she found at like Cody's old house or whatever. And Cankerman stops and he looks at it and then looks at her. And then she hugs Cankerman. And Cankerman hugs her.
I am, for the listener, shaking my damned head.
Yeah. Shaking my damn head and my fist at the TV. What the hell? As she's hugging Cankerman, Cankerman starts to shrink and get smaller, and he turns into Cody. Cody was a Cankerman all along.
Dream Cody.
Dream Cody, of course. Yeah. And then Jesse picks up Cody. She's like walking out of the building at this point. Like all of the people who were like cocooned or whatever are like coming out of like,
yeah. Released. And to be clear, the cocoon people are not the victims of the Cankerman. They are the kids at the orphanage.
Yeah. Yeah.
Plus yes. Annabeth Gish.
Yes. Correct. Wasn't clear on at first. I thought it was like all of the people that the Cankerman, you know, consumed.
I also thought that, but it does present the problem of like, how are they going to explain where they've been this whole time? Especially poor Thomas Jane. Like everyone thinks that he hit Kate Bosworth and then left town.
Yeah.
Right. Cause right. The Cankerman like smacks her in the face. So she has this gigantic bruise.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's probably for the best that he doesn't come back.
That he doesn't come back. So she's like, where are you going? And she's like, I'm taking him home.
And Annabeth Gish is just like, of course.
Of course.
Of course. Yes. I'm sorry. You go.
That's crazy.
Reclaim your boy.
That's crazy.
Can you forgive me for trying to stop you?
You know what the problem is? If you want to like do some wild shit at the end where you're like, we don't have to explain like all the paperwork involved in like Jesse taking the kid back and all this other stuff. We don't have to explain all that. If you don't like spend the previous hour and a half like explaining every little fucking thing,
right?
You know, everything has to have like an answer and a backstory and whatever else. And, you know, then now you're at the end and she's just like, I'm going to walk away with this boy. And Annabeth Gish is like, you got it.
Of course. Yeah. You got to walk away with that boy.
So they go home. It's really crazy. Jesse gives him his mother's diary and explains that what happened was when he was very little, his mother got sick. She got cancer. And Dan, did you like this when they were looking at the, like the medical report or whatever? And she like points out, and she's like, do you know what that is? And he says, canker.
I wanted to scream. I was so annoyed because it's like, that's fine. That on its own is fine. However, no one's ever heard the word cancer and been like, wait, did you just say canker?
No, nobody's
right. Ever heard. Like there's no mishearing it. It's a purely visual thing.
Right. And it wasn't like the kid's reading it like off of charts when his mom is sick in the hospital. Like, and he's just like, oh, I don't know how to pronounce this word. Let me sound it out. Canker. Got it.
Yeah.
It's just crazy. But she gets very sick, gets cancer. And eventually, you know, she is dying, and they bring Cody to like say goodbye to her. And she says, I'll always be with you. That's what the Cankerman said to him. So all of this is like just this, again, trauma.
Right.
Of losing his mom, cancer. And like she's obviously like she's in late stages of cancer, and like she looks like her face is all drawn. Her eyes are black around the, you know, the eyeball and whatever.
It's a bit over the top. It reminded me of also, when I say a bit over the top, non-derogatory. That's just like, it is what it is in this case, I feel.
Sure.
Reminded me of what Stephen King am I thinking of with the spina bifida sister in The Dumbwaiter?
Oh, fucking Pet Sematary.
Yes. Okay. Okay.
It We're is still in Pet Sematary territory.
Pet Sematary territory.
That's, yeah, that's what I said.
That's what I said. I, yeah, that is, again, it's just like too many things going on here.
Too many things.
And by the way, that's how the movie ends. Oh, well.
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 Oh, well.
Oh, well. Hold on a second.
So.
Because now it's bedtime. It's time to go to bed.
So Jesse, you know, tells him everything about his mom, what happened to her and whatever. And then later on.
Oh, but also let's mention, she's like, you have a very special gift.
Well, yeah, that's right. She's like, you have a very special gift. And then she's telling him a bedtime story. And she's like, it's about a mom who needed a little boy and a little boy who needed a mom. And he's like, does this story have a happy ending? And she's like, it does have a happy ending. And
what if she's like, kind of, but the rest of the story, it's going to be a little flat. It's not going to be. It's going to be a happy ending, but it's not really going to feel earned.
Yeah, yeah. It's going to be dark, but you're not going to care about it at all.
By the end of it, you're going to kind of be like, well, it's fucked up what happened to Thomas Jane. Kind of got the raw end of the deal. It seemed like he was really doing everything right here.
Well, that was his problem.
That's life, though, right?
Sure is.
Try to do the right thing. Get a little kick in the ass.
That's it.
No one suffers like I do.
She tells him, you know, the story, and then she's like, and the bully just woke up in his bed like nothing had happened, and he was totally fine. And who else was there?
The mom with the C-3PO face.
Yeah, yeah. The and she came home to her husband Whelan, and Daddy got the best gift of all, and. We cut to Thomas Jane, like, hugging his dead son, Sean, as if they're, like, both dead in heaven, embracing
in
each other.
Heaven, Thomas Jane is there.
In heaven. Yeah. And then that's it. It goes to the credits.
Oh, well, she's like, well, first he's like, hey, lady, can all that stuff really happen?
Oh,
and yeah. She's like, I don't know, Cody. You tell me, biatch. No, she's like,
maybe.
I mean,
you're a very special little boy.
Yeah. And who knows when you get older, maybe, you know, put your mind to things and you figure this out for me real quick.
Yeah, maybe you could bring people back from the dead because you were killing them in your dreams.
Yeah, that's like that's one parenting side. It's like you could do anything you want. You could be anything you want. A necromancer, anything.
Dark Lord of the Underworld, whatever you want.
That's the problem with parents these days. Give their kids these participation trophies. Teach them the dark arts.
Yeah, I'm grooming my kid to be a dark wizard.
So then the very end of the movie, which this sucked so bad.
Yeah.
When she's like, good night, Cody. And he goes, good night, mom. Shut up. This lady was trying to use you as a... Again, a necromancer most of the movie.
Yeah.
Also, like, not saying Thomas Jane didn't care about his dead son, but, like, he seemed like he was doing much better with all of this than she was.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
It almost felt like it was trying to say that she cared more about the dead son than he did, which...
Right. Which, like, no I sense. Think I think probably, like, what... What the intention was like that classic dichotomy where she is like being consumed by her grief and he's pretending he's over it. But yeah, obviously, I'm doing most of the heavy lifting here.
Yeah.
That's not really in the text.
It is not in the text. That's it.
Written and directed by Mike Flanagan. That's the first thing you see. Like, I did it. Me. I did it. Nobody else gets credit for writing and directing. I did this.
Yeah. Not great. Not a great movie.
No.
Like I said, I think I liked it better than Oculus. I think Oculus, the more I think about that, it's the worse it gets.
But Oculus did have the part where she bites the light bulb.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
And right, she does get a giant spike through her body at the end. Or whatever.
Yes, yes.
But that's all very dumb, too. Complete lack of Katie Siegel here, huh?
Yeah, what's going on? You think they were fighting?
Oh,
they were having a fight.
Trouble in Paradise? She was probably pregnant and couldn't be on set.
As much as it pains me to not put you in front of a camera right now.
Yeah. Oh, God. I've never been more attracted to you in my life.
Oy. Oy, oy, oy.
Ay, ay, ay. Oh, man. All right. That's the Flanagan for this week. Are we doing a letterbox?
Yeah, we also forgot to do last week's movie.
What was last week's movie?
What was last week's movie? For the bonus show. Yeah, we didn't do Mangolia.
I thought we did.
I don't think so.
Because I said 5 stars and you said 4.5.
Oh,
and
yeah,
you were like, there's just something that I'm looking for to hate about this movie.
No, no, I did not say that.
No,
no, no.
That wrong.
You're cramming words in my mouth, biatch. No, we didn't do Mangolia. So let's do Before I Wake. Let's do Every Time I Die, and then we'll move on to Magnolia. Okay, so Before I Wake.
Before I Wake. Honk Shoe. Honk Shoe.
Honk Shoe. I like it. Let's, real quick. Honk Shoe is spelled H-O-N-K hyphen S-H-O-O.
Yeah.
Honk Shoe. Honk Shoe. Okay. No, we're not. This does not get a like.
Sure, no like.
We do not like this. No. I'm going to give this like 1.5 stars. Like, it's 1 to 1.5 stars for me. I really did not enjoy this.
What did we give Oculus?
Good question, dear boy. Let's find out.
Thank you.
Oculus got 2 stars.
Wow.
Yeah.
Too high.
I agree. I agree. We were our judgment was clouded by, I guess, having just watched it having a rousing discussion. But you know what? Even talking about this one was less fun than talking about Oculus.
You're right.
So by that measure,
yeah.
1.5 stars.
All right. I'll concede. I was gonna give it 2 stars, but you're right. 1.5.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
I know I can be a bit, what's the word? Charismatic.
yeah, you are.
Sort of cult leader vibes.
You got that riz.
Yeah. Did I accidentally riz you up?
Yeah. You know what I was thinking about the other day?
Or riz you down, I guess. You thinking about Livy Dunn and Baby Gronk?
Yeah, Livy Dunn, risen up Baby Gronk.
Yeah.
When you said that to me, and I was like, I don't know what those words all mean together, and then you explained it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I simply explained that Baby Gronk is the new Riz God.
Of course. yes. So 1.5 stars, Honk Shoe, Honk Shoe.
Honk Shoe, Honk Shoe. Did we talk about As Much Milk As Your Little Belly Can Hold on mic, or was that afterward?
I think it was on mic.
Okay.
No, all it right. must have been on mic. Yeah, yeah, it was.
Okay, good.
As much milk as your little belly can hold.
Could be 2%. Could be the chocolate milk.
Yeah, yeah.
But ideally, you want that whole milk.
It's crazy.
That's
the kind of guy you want to keep away from your kids.
I wish that clip was on Letterboxd. I would give that 5 stars and a like, hands down.
Yeah.
By the way, if you don't know what I'm talking about, Jim Harbaugh, as much milk as your little belly can hold. That's the Google search.
Search it out.
Okay. Until next time.
Yeah. So, all right. Real quick, just some scheduling stuff. Of course, on Tuesday, we're doing Twin Peaks. We're almost done with season 2. Next Friday on the bonus show, we're going to be talking Blue Velvet.
Blue Velvet. That's right. We took a brief detour because one of our wonderful patrons hit us with a request, which you are entitled to one of when you sign up.
Hell yeah.
We did Magnolia. Oh, we forgot to review it just now. Whatever. It can wait. We'll do it at some other time. Maybe we'll do it as like, we'll do a special. Here's what I'm thinking.
Okay.
May Rose, who, requested that movie.
Yes.
Actually, as we were recording this, said, love how this episode is only 30 minutes shorter than the movie. So what I propose to you now is a 30 minute, spectacular that culminates in us reviewing the Letterboxd or reviewing it on Letterboxd.
Oh, okay. Like a little tag or whatever. Yeah. Okay.
Or like, but with a lot of pomp and circumstance.
Of course.
Give it what it deserves.
Yeah, no, that's a good idea. All right. And then, so next week is Blue Velvet. And then in 2 weeks, we're going to be back with Ouija,
Ouija 2.
Origin of Evil. Yeah, yeah. Ouija 2, Origin of Evil. What were you going to say?
We also got a comment on our Hush episode on the Patreon, which I need to address because it applies to me directly.
Oh, shit.
Sorry. Kelly from the Patreon.
Uh-huh.
Wants us to do a Tom McDonald diss track. So that's something to consider. But also mentions that her kid's first concert was Weird Al. Same as my first concert. And at this concert, Weird Al sang Albuquerque, which he did not do when I went to see him, even though that was my favorite song. So I just want to say your kid's very lucky. I'm very jealous. Congratulations to you both. Let me know if there's like any extra verses that he adds to the 14 minute song. You know, like just for the live version.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And that's the kind of interaction you can expect when you subscribe to patreon.com/kingmepod.
Patreon.com/kingmepod. And okay, we're out of here. And until next time, stay pregnant.
Yeah, stay pregnant.